Is a ghost town. Good morning. Wow, wasn't that like, y'all ever just sit here and like look around like, are you seeing what I'm seeing? Like, that's unbelievable. I'm so thankful for Kirsten. She stepped in last second. I was supposed to sing that special. And I just don't like heights, so when it took me up on the thing, I was like, no, I'm out. I'm not doing that. So, no, the talent in this church is just unbelievable, and that really kind of sums up. If you're going to clap for the talent in this church, you got to do a little better, right, than just a few. So it really is just unbelievable, the amount of talent and gifts and abilities. And that song really kind of sums up, in my opinion, kind of what this series has been about, which is when you're chasing after certain things to give you something only God can give you, it is never going to be enough. It's always going to leave you with this void and this emptiness inside. That's why we called this series Ghost Town, because a lot of us internally inside, we're just empty and we're just dry and we're weary. And part of the problem is we're looking to these certain things in life to give us something that really only God can give you. And until you figure that out, you're gonna waste a lot of time in life chasing after things, thinking it's gonna give you something that it actually can't. And what we've said over the past few weeks is really, that's the story of humanity. It's us spending our lives chasing after things that do not satisfy, have never satisfied, and honestly never have any hope of satisfying us. But we pursue them anyway. And today I wanna talk about how we can take things like success and achievement, and we can start to look to that, again, to give us something only God can give us. And here's the thing about success and achievement. Actually, deep down inside of every one of us in our heart, we have a desire, we have an ache, we have a longing to do something great with our life, right? There's something inside of you that wants to make a difference. There's something inside of you that actually wants you to use the gifts and the abilities that God has given you to make a difference in this world. But for a lot of us, if we're honest, also inside of our heart, there's something else. And so it's not enough for us just to do something good. There's something that gets a little bit twisted. And we start to look to success and achievement to give us something that only God can. So then it becomes, I have to win no matter what. And I have to excel no matter what. And I have to constantly be moving my way up the ladder no matter what. And before long, we find ourselves overworking, overstressing, overmedicating, all for this one simple desire, which is to try to get ahead. Years ago, I read an interesting interview in a magazine about Madonna, and she had this quote in there that I remember reading and thinking, I would have never imagined in a million years that someone like Madonna would struggle with this. This is what she wrote. I have an iron will, and my will has always been to conquer some horrible feelings of inadequacy. I push past one spell of it and discover myself as a special human being. And then I get to another stage and I think I'm mediocre and uninteresting. Again and again, my drive in life is from this horrible fear of being mediocre. And that's always pushing me because even though I've become somebody, I still have to prove that I'm somebody. My struggle has never ended and it probably never will. So someone who has used her gifts and abilities in some tremendous ways. She has millions and millions of fans. She's reached a peak of success in her field. And yet what she says is that what I'm driven by is a feeling of inadequacy. I feel like I'm not enough. And whenever you get to a place where you're gathering your self-worth externally, whether that's from the approval of people, which is what we talked about last week, or whether you're gathering your self-worth externally from your accomplishments and your success, either way, what happens ultimately is you feel like it's just never enough. Now, where does this come from, this desire to want to succeed, this desire to want to achieve? And the reality is, when it comes to, there's a couple different ways that you can define your identity, right? Really, it's primarily two ways in which you can define your identity that I want to look at. The first way is a very damaging way, but it's what we'll call success-based identity. I put this on your outline, but success-based identity is really where you think you control the opinions and the approval of people through your performance, right? So it's all about your performance. You live a very performance-based lifestyle where you're constantly trying to gather your self-worth externally from getting people's opinions and approval of your performance. Now, if you do that, there's a couple things that are almost always true about your life. The first one upon your outline is you will confuse who you are with what you accomplish. You get those two things confused. Now, all the way through this series, you guys have been so kind to kind of entertain me with these little self-assessment tests that I put inside of the outline that you got on your way in. I think these are important because we talked about in week one that when you're trying to identify idols in your life, when you're trying to figure out in your heart what is it that you're looking to give you something only God can give you, it takes a level of self-awareness that most of us don't just naturally have. So sometimes we have to be prompted to kind of look deep inside of ourselves. So that's what we've tried to do with some of this self-awareness stuff as we've gone through this series. So in your outline, I have a series of little prompts in there that we'll kind of go through as we go through this message to kind of just allow you to ask some questions about yourself, all right? So that first one is there, it's on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being, yes, that's absolutely true about me. The first prompt is this: I believe that if I make mistakes, I am a failure. On a scale of 1 to 10, just think about this in your life. Whenever you make a mistake, maybe it's a mistake you make at work, maybe it's a mistake you make in your home, but you make a mistake. Do you tend to look at that mistake and think, not only did I make a mistake, but I am a mistake, right? Not only did I fail at that, but actually I feel like I am a failure, all right? On a scale of 1 to 10, where do you fall? Next one says, when I'm criticized, I tend to take it personally. We talked a little bit about this one last week. On a scale of 1 to 10, even when it's constructive criticism, for a lot of us, it kind of stings deeply, right? And we play that criticism over and over and over again in our head. And part of that is, again, because we're trying to gather our self-worth externally. Third prompt is, I have to work to feel alive. On a scale of 1 to 10, like if this is you, if you're a 10, you're the kind of person, you just can't relax, right? You go on vacation with your family, the only reason you go is because they make you go, right? And they tell you things like, you cannot check your phone while we're on vacation. And so you have it down underneath the table, right? And just kind of glancing at it every once in a while. That's where you feel most alive. Your identity is tied up around your work, around your success, around your accomplishments. So when you're not in the middle of that, you don't even know who you are, right? This is a temptation I think a lot of us have, because accomplishment can be a whole lot like a drug, right? When you accomplish something, when you have some kind of success, whether it's at work or in the home, right? Wherever your identity tends to kind of be wrapped around, like you feel this high, right? There's a rush of adrenaline that comes along with that success and that achievement, but it doesn't last, does it? So you have to go out and have another success or have some other kind of achievement, right? Except the high isn't quite as high this time. So you have to do a little bit more, right? And a little bit more. And over time, you begin to realize that, you know, an achievement addict is no different than any other kind of addict. The only difference is, in our culture, it's actually socially acceptable to be an achievement addict. People cheer you on when you're an achievement addict. It's easy to lie to yourself when you're an achievement addict. You'll say things like, I'm not really doing this for me. This isn't about me. This is about my kids, right? I want them to have a great future, right? This isn't about me. Yeah, you'll say things like, well, it's just a season. It's a busy season. I'm not gonna live at this pace forever. You know, it's just a season. I'm gonna do this for a while, but this won't, right? It's so easy to kind of lie and manipulate the situation. But the reality is, what you have to kind of get a grasp on is, you're not your giftedness. You understand that, right? God didn't make a singer. God didn't make an accountant. God didn't make a lawyer. God didn't make a teacher, right? You are not your giftedness. And you are not any more or any less valuable to God based on your job title or your tax bracket, your social status. And even if you lose your job, even if you're struggling at home, even if you've had some kind of massive failure, God's affection for you does not waver, right? Your value in his eyes, it does not decline. And so yes, you were made to do great things. And it's so awesome when you get to use your gifts and your abilities, right? It's a wonderful thing to be able to work and have success and have achievements. But your worth and your value are not based on your achievements. All right, here's something else that will happen to you if you're gathering your self-worth externally. You'll have a hard time celebrating other people when they succeed. Have any of you seen this in your life? You have a hard time celebrating the people around you? There's a couple more prompts for you on your outline. The first one is, I criticize others in order to feel better about myself. On a scale of 1 to 10, how often do you find yourself with just a critical spirit? Right? This overflows to, you're critical towards your kids, you're critical towards your spouse, you're critical towards your coworkers. Nobody can ever quite do enough for you. Criticism, by the way, is usually just a cowardly form of self-praise. It's what we do to make ourselves feel better, right? Second one there is, I compare myself a lot to other people. On a scale of 1 to 10, how often are you find yourself comparing your life to somebody else's life, your giftedness to somebody else's giftedness? We talked a little bit about this last week, but in a world of social media, this is so hard to avoid, isn't it? You're constantly comparing your life to somebody else's social media stream, which is really just a highlight reel. That's all that is, right? Nobody's posting normal, like, stuff, right? Those of you who've posted this morning, it's a great selfie of you sitting at church with your husband or wife. You didn't post about the fight you had on the way here, did you? You didn't put that up. Nope, we're here happy, we're holding hands, everything's great, right? So it's this reality. A lot of times we're, especially those of you who are younger, it's really, you gotta be careful. You're sometimes comparing your chapter 1 to somebody else's chapter 20, All right, so you just have to be aware of that whole comparison game. Next one is that I tend to covet a lot more than I celebrate. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you struggle just celebrating the things in your life versus always being in a place where you're just coveting what other people have or what other people have done? See, if your whole life revolves around getting to the top rung of the ladder, you gotta be the best musician, you gotta be the top salesman, you gotta be the best mom. If your whole life revolves around that, and then eventually you find yourself feeling kind of average in what you do, it's gonna lead to all kinds of cynicism and bitterness and judgmentalism because you have to find other people to blame for your perceived failure. Matthew chapter 16 says, what good will it be for a man if he gains the whole world and yet forfeits his soul? Or what can a man give in exchange for his soul? It's a great question. Is it worth it? Right, to gain the whole world and yet forfeit your soul? In other words, Jesus knew there would be this temptation for us to go out and to take success and achievement and use it to give us something that only God can give us. And you chase after this, and it doesn't matter how much you succeed, it doesn't matter how much you achieve, you still ultimately, your soul is gone. There's an emptiness. There's a void inside of you, and some of you are there right now. And we start to actually believe, hey, if I could just be successful in my work, if I could just get that title, if I could get that raise, if I could get that group of people to look at me and think that I'm a success, if I could get that, then I won't feel inadequate, right? I won't have fear. I won't have self-doubt. I'll finally be somebody. But for those of you that have worked your way to the top, there's something that you already know, and that is the higher you get on that ladder, what do you accrue? Just more pressure, more fear, more anxiety, and even more self-doubt. Years ago, I was able to start a friendship with a young lady by the name of Sean Johnson. And Sean is just one of the most like intelligent, athletic people I've ever met in my life. Many of you know she won a gold medal in the Olympics as a gymnast. She won Dancing with the Stars. It's like you kind of look at her life from the outside and you say, man, that girl, I mean, everything she tries, she's so successful. You would think that she's an individual which has like a tremendous amount of confidence and just can conquer, you know, anything that she wants. One day she would tell me a story that I think is one of the most heartbreaking stories I've ever heard. She's 16 years old when she won her gold medal. At that Olympics, before the gold medal, she actually won 2 silver medals. And the first silver medal that she won when she was standing up on the awards thing, right, the ceremony at the end, the guy, I can't remember who he was, I'm sure some kind of Olympic official, the guy who takes the silver medal and places it over her neck, when he places it over her neck, he says to her, looks her right in the eyes and says, I'm sorry. Sorry. Like, you know, you got second place. I'm sorry. And it crushed her. And she said, I hardly even remember the silver medal. And I didn't enjoy the gold medal at all. And this is what she said. I'll never forget this. She said, I felt like I had failed the world. I hadn't just failed as a gymnast, but as a human being. See, you have to understand, it doesn't matter how much success you have. It doesn't matter how much you achieve and what you accomplish. If you get to a place in your life where you gather your self-worth from your performance and your achievement and your success, it's never gonna end well. There's always gonna be somebody who does a little bit more than you. There's always gonna be somebody, right? You could be the second best in the world at something. She literally was the second best in the world in that particular event. And there's somebody standing a little bit taller than you on that podium. There's gonna be somebody that looks you in the eye and says, sorry, you didn't make it. Right? And you, if you're gathering your self-worth externally, you're gonna feel as if you're a failure. Here's the other thing that happens when you gather your self-worth externally. You live a hurried, non-compassionate life. A couple more prompts, all right? The first one there is I feel like there's never enough time in the day to get everything done that I wanna get done. In other words, you get to the end of the day and every day you just feel exhausted and you feel like you didn't get everything done you needed to get done. There's still more on the list and you just feel kind of frustrated. You feel this frenzy. The next one is I have a hard time enjoying life's moments because I'm too focused on the next agenda item. This is you. You can't celebrate, all right, the simple moments or the simple success or the simple achievement because you're already moving on to what's next, right? What's the next thing I have to accomplish? What's the next thing I have to do? And if you're gathering your self-worth externally from your performance, I promise you this, you are overcommitted, you are overburdened, and you're overwhelmed. And some of you, that describes exactly where you're at right now. Many of you be there. Well, you're living that life right now, and life for you is just, it's an activity blur. Life is not something you savor. Life is not something you're experiencing. Life is not something you're enjoying. It's just an activity blur. You go from one thing to the next thing, and you can't hurry and be compassionate. You just can't. I put on your outline that when hurry increases, compassion always decreases. And so for some of you right now that are lacking compassion in your life, you lack compassion towards your spouse, you lack compassion towards your coworkers, maybe even your kids. For a lot of you, listen, it's not a heart issue. It's a calendar issue. You're just too busy, right? And you're flying at such a rate of speed through your life that you completely miss the moments that you have to just show kindness and just show compassion towards the people that you genuinely actually already compare about. See, we rush thinking somehow we're gonna be saving up all kinds of time, and we don't. The only thing that you're storing up is impatience, frustration, stress, and anger. Here's what Jesus had to say about this one time. This is Luke chapter 10. It's kind of a familiar story if you've been around church for a long time. But Luke 10, it says, as Jesus and his disciples continued on their way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Her sister Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he taught. But Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing, and she came to Jesus and she said, Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me. But the Lord said to her, my dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. There's only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken from her. Like it's this moment where you can hear the desperation in Martha's voice, right? You can hear the hurry, you can hear the stress, you can hear all the pressure. What if something doesn't go right? What if everything's not perfect? What if, you know, all of our guests aren't honored? Right? You can hear all that. She's concerned about all that stuff, right? The external stuff, right? The performance, the achievement, the success of pulling off this moment. And Jesus just says, hey, you're missing it here. You're missing what's most important. Your sister has found it. Here Martha is worried about all these details, and the God of the universe is present in her house. He's right there in the room with her. She completely misses it. You see, when hurry gets in us, we start to miss the one thing that matters the most, which is that God is with us. He's with us. Right? He's with us. When you're hurrying, you forget that God's with you. See, I think it's interesting to me. Everybody in the world says, like, I can't find anybody that would ever disagree with me. Everybody agrees that we should work less and we should slow down if we want to live a more fuller, connected life. Right? I think almost all of you would agree with that. Yep. If I want to live a fuller, more connected life, I've got to probably work less and I've got to slow down some. And yet nobody ever does, or at least very few, because nobody points out the obvious reason that nobody is actually slowing down. And the reason is, I think there's a couple of them. I think first is exhaustion has become a status symbol in our culture. We live with this mentality. I see it all the time. No days off, right? That's toxic. It's toxic. When exhaustion becomes a status symbol, it's toxic. And then the second reason, just as much as self-worth, has become net worth. Right? Self-worth has become net worth. When you get a combination of those two things going, no wonder everybody's hurrying. You think like you have to, especially when you're gathering your self-worth externally. But there's an alternative. You don't have to be stuck in that hopeless cycle. And here's the alternative I put on your outline. It's what we'll call position-based identity. And it's very different than what we've been talking about up to this point. Because up to this point, what we've been talking about is it's possible to go through life and to form your identity, your worth, your value around your performance and people's evaluation of your performance. But position-based identity is different because here you understand that your sense of self-worth comes from who you are in Christ. And the more grounded you get in this, the better you are, right? Because here you're gathering your self-worth internally, right? It's here and what God says about you. We said last week, idols aren't expelled. You don't expel idols. You have to replace an idol. So what's happening here is you're instead of looking to achievement and success to define you, you're looking at Jesus to define you. Now, does this mean you don't work hard? Does this mean that you don't want to do well? Does this mean that you don't want to be like the best stay-at-home mom? Does this mean that you don't want the next raise or the next promotion? No, it doesn't mean that at all. It just means that your identity is not totally wrapped up in what you accomplish. It means you realize you are more than your giftedness. You're more than the title on your office. You're more than the name of the company on your business card. You're more. Position-based identity doesn't come from my performance. It doesn't come from your evaluation of my performance. Rather, it comes from my identity of who I am in Jesus, right? You can't take that away from me. Now, when you learn to live from that place, and just so you understand, nobody lives from that place all the time. Nobody gets this right all the time. We're all gonna tend to drift and look to things like approval. We're all gonna tend to drift to look to things like finances. We're all gonna drift and start to look at things like accomplishment and success to define us. But when you can get this right, more often than not, when you can get your identity comes from Jesus, you live in a different way. Here's a couple different things you'll notice. The first one I put on your outline is you'll ditch perfectionism and you'll focus on excellence. They're very, very different. Perfectionism, I hinted at this a little bit last week, perfectionism is not about achievement and growth. A lot of us lie to ourselves and we say, yep, perfectionism, really it's about achievement and growth. It's not. Perfectionism, or this idea that if I, if I live perfectly, if I look perfect, if I act perfect, right, then I'll be somebody. But the reality is you've bought into this thing. If I can look perfect, if I can act perfect, if I can live perfect, then I won't have to deal with the pain that comes along with blame and judgment and shame. So perfectionism is just a defense mechanism that a lot of us use to try to avoid the pain that comes along with blame and judgment and shame. Somewhere along the line, you bought into a debilitating belief system that says, I am what I accomplish and how well I accomplish it. And it's toxic. Now, excellence is much different. Healthy striving is much different because it doesn't start with what do other people think. It starts with me. And the question is just simple. When you're searching after excellence in life, the question is just, how can I improve? How can I improve? That's just it. I did this last night, right? After the first service, I just sat down and I thought, you know what? I think there's some things that I could do better. I think I can look through these notes and find some different ways to communicate some of these truths. I think I could actually improve at helping people understand some of this stuff and connecting with it, right? That wasn't an unhealthy perfection on my behalf. I just sat down and said, how can I improve? Perfectionism would be me sitting down and saying, what will they think? Right? That's perfectionism. Perfectionism doesn't start here. It starts out here. What are they gonna think? But healthy striving is just simply saying, how can I improve? Perfectionism for some of you is this 20-ton shield that you lug around with you, thinking it's gonna protect you from blame and shame and judgment, but it's actually the thing that's keeping you from taking flight and being who God actually created you to be. Right? So there's a difference between those two. And you'll see that when you begin to root your identity in who Jesus says that you are. All right, second thing, you'll start to see people as gifts, not steps. Really interesting dynamic. This happens to almost all people who gather their self-worth externally from their performance. Over time, even if they genuinely care about people, they'll start to use people, right? You'll use people's gifts to make you look better. You'll use people's approval to make yourself feel better. You'll use people as a stepping stone to get wherever you need to get in order for you to fill up your self-worth. You'll just use people. But what happens when you begin to root your identity in Jesus is you stop looking at people and using them. You stop seeing them as steps. You start seeing them as human beings. You start seeing them as gifts, right, that God's placed in your life. See, whenever, and I've noticed this in my own life, whenever I slide back into trying to get my approval from people's acceptance, whenever I slide back into trying to get my approval from achievement and success, it puts me in a place where in front of people, I always want to make sure I come off as a very interesting person, right? I want to be interesting to them. I want them to approve of me. When you get to a place where your identity is rooted in Jesus and you don't need that kind of false sense propping you up, what happens is you can stop living your life in such a way that you have to be interesting, and you can start living your life in such a way that you're just interested. You're interested in other people instead of coming across as interesting. So I put on your outline, because this is just a little tool that I've been trying to use. Focus on being interested instead of being interesting. In your interactions with people, like practice this tomorrow, right? When you go to work, when you wake up with your family, when you're out tomorrow night, when you're watching football, whatever, right? Try, instead of being interesting, try just to be interested in the people around you, to be present, to ask questions about their life, to notice the pain that they might have or that they're going through, and just see the shift that begins to happen in your relationships and in your life. And here's the third thing, this is really important. You're gonna start seeing waiting as an opportunity, not punishment. See, most of us look at waiting and we think, oh, we're being punished, right? Stuck in traffic, you're like, what did I do wrong today, God? You know, why is this happening to me? Like, you're stuck in a doctor's office for 30 minutes and you just can't believe that you're having to sit there. You know why we hate waiting? It's always a reminder to us that we're not in control. And we don't like to be reminded that we're not in control. And so we tend to look at waiting as if it's some kind of burden, if it's some kind of punishment. But what if waiting was actually a gift? What if getting stuck in traffic was actually a gift? What if waiting in the doctor's office was actually a gift, or being stuck in line was actually a gift? Psalms 27 says this, wait patiently for the Lord. Be brave and courageous. Yes, wait patiently for the Lord. There's this concept, scripturally speaking, it takes a lot of bravery. It takes a lot of courage to be able to sit and wait and not do anything, right? If you're gathering your self-worth externally, you always have to be doing something to feel like you're valuable. So when you have to wait and you're doing nothing, you feel like your self-worth is just, right? See, when your identity is based in Jesus and that's where you get your worth and your value, you can sit and you can wait with bravery, with courageousness. Psalms 23 says this, the Lord is my shepherd and I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. How many of you have heard that verse before? Yeah, a lot of us that have been around church for a while know that. Sometimes you hear that in funerals, you hear it in different settings. It's this beautiful passage, this reminder that we have a God who cares deeply about us. He's our shepherd, right? He's leading us to green pastures. He's taking us to quiet waters. His goal is to refresh our soul. About 7 years ago, I bought a farm, just like an hour outside of Nashville. And I'm not a farmer. I've never farmed anything in my life. I grew up in the city. I'd never been on a tractor before. I'd never really been around animals except for like a dog. And so I bought this farm, and then I have this farm, and I'm like, you know what? I need some animals. I'm gonna put some animals on this farm. So I started with some chickens. I got some chickens, and that was kind of cool. And I started getting some eggs. I'm like, wow, this is awesome. And then one day I read this ad and somebody was giving away a donkey. I was like, that'd be cool. I'd like to have a donkey. That'd be awesome. So I called the guy and he's like, yep. And he shows up like a couple hours later and he has this, you know, big trailer, and sure enough, there's a donkey in there. He's like, do you want the donkey? Like, yeah, I'll take him. He's like, I got three sheep in here. You want those? Yeah, why not? I'll take the sheep. So I take the three sheep, right? So I have the sheep for a while. One day I go out to the farm and there's like a baby one, like a baby sheep lamb type thing. And I was like, where'd that come from? I mean, like, seriously, I remember exactly where I was standing. I like kind of looked up in the air, like, where, like, how did this get here? Like, I didn't even know anybody was pregnant. Like, and now there's a baby, like, right there. And they are really, really cute when they're babies. I have a couple pictures for you. It's the first ones of my boys with one of the baby lambs. Yep. They grow up, though, and they're not as cute. The kids and the sheep. But there's another one. Yeah, they really are cute. They're like a little stuffed animal for, like, 2 weeks, and then they're just annoying. So what's crazy is over a couple years, this kept happening. Like every time I'm out there, there's like a new one. I'm like, whoa, like this is crazy. Like literally I ended up, before, I've sold them all now because I'm not good with them. But I ended up with like 22, 23, maybe like 25 of these things. And they're just everywhere, right? And it's like, I'm every time I'm like, how is this happening? Like, I never, ever knew one of them was pregnant, not at one time, right? So the Lord, he is your shepherd. That's a good thing that it's him and not me. Because I'm not good at this shepherd thing, right? But I did learn over time something about these sheep. And I would, every time I was out there, I was Googling something new. Like, because I'm like, is that normal that they do this and that? One of the interesting things about sheep, and I never really understood this verse until I learned this about sheep. But sheep are very skittish animals, right? Now, goats are a hardy animal. So that's why when you often go to a petting zoo, there's goats. Goats aren't afraid of anything. Sheep are afraid of everything. Like, I have this beautiful little stream that goes through the farm, right? They won't drink water out of it. It's crystal clear. It's from a spring. It's incredible. They will not drink out of that stream because sheep will not drink from moving water. They're skittish. It scares them to death. So this idea here in this verse that like the shepherd takes the sheep and he lets them lie down in green pastures where they can eat. And then he takes them to, this translation says quiet waters, but a lot of versions say still waters. And the actual Hebrew, the phrase is they're taken to waters of rest. Waters of rest, because the whole concept here was after they've eaten, now they have to drink. And these sheep are covering lots and lots of territory, right? Because in biblical times, they're in a desert. So they're having to search to find a green pasture. And they find a green pasture, but now they're tired and exhausted and they're thirsty. So the shepherd has to take them to these little pools of water that they can find still waters, because the shepherd knows that the sheep will not drink from the moving water. And then once they've had a drink, now they can rest. It's waters of rest, because the sheep can't always be moving. They can't always be grazing. They can't always be traveling and doing. And in the same way, listen, you and I, we're not made to be moving all the time. We're not created to be doing all the time. We need places of rest. We need places that we can just sit and be. And so what are the waters of rest in your life? Because God wants this for your life. He is the good shepherd. You need these moments. And maybe, you know, maybe for you, it's just, I think honestly, if you could just 10 minutes a day, if you could find 10 minutes a day, don't get legalistic about this, but like 10 minutes a day where you don't have your phone and you don't have a to-do list and it's just unhurried time. And it's kind of this moment where you just kind of become aware of the things that you forget about when you're in a hurry, right? Because when hurry is inside of you, you miss the presence of the Lord. Right, so it's these quiet moments where it's just unhurried time and you're just reminded of simple truths like, hey, God really cares about my life. God cares about this crisis that I'm going through. God cares about the pain that I have right now. God cares about every step that I'm taking. God's gonna be with me every step of the way, no matter what I go through, he's with me. Just 10 minutes a day without an agenda, without a phone, without a to-do list, where you just pray, or maybe you draw a picture, or maybe you paint, or you read some scripture, but what you're doing here is you're paying attention. You're paying attention to what's going on inside of you. You're asking questions of yourself, like what are the things that I'm looking to give me something that only God can give me? Am I taking good things like approval and good things like success and good things like achievement and maybe good things like love or good things like money? Am I taking those good things and allowing them to become ultimate things that then become idle things that then become destructive things? You're just paying attention to what's going on in the inside. See, we need these moments to remind ourselves that through the gospel, if you root your identity, right, in what you've accomplished, it's always going to leave you empty. But through the gospel, when you root your identity in what has been accomplished for you through Jesus, oh yeah, that's where the good stuff is. That's where you can thrive. That's where you can start to see people as human beings and not steps. That's where you can start to see waiting as like a gift and not a curse. It's in those moments, right, where you can begin to live the life that God has for you. Let's pray. Maybe as you guys bow your head and close your eyes, maybe there's some of you that are here today that have never given your life to Jesus. You just never surrendered to him. Your life, your worth, your value, your identity has all been tied up in things like getting people's approval. It's been about trying to succeed and achieve. And maybe that's just left you incredibly empty. Maybe you're here and you're just overwhelmed and overcommitted, empty and dry. And maybe today you just want to open up your heart and you want to surrender. And maybe just sitting where you're sitting, it's literally this simple. Sitting where you're sitting, you just open up your heart and you just simply pray right now. Dear God, I want to ask you to forgive me of my sins. God, I want to stop going my way and I want to go your way. And I want to ask what your son Jesus did on that cross be applied to my life. I want to root my identity, my worth, my value in you and in you alone. There's others of us here that we prayed that prayer years ago. We've been following Christ for some time, but maybe we've drifted. Maybe you're here and you've drifted and you've fallen into that trap of looking for your worth and your value from things like approval and success and achievement, and it's exhausted you. And maybe for you, this day, this series is about driving a stake down in the ground and just saying, God, forgive me, I'm sorry. I've drifted. And I want to gather my self-worth internally through who you say that I am. I understand my worth and my value is not based on my performance. It's not based on people's evaluation of my performance. It's not based on other people's approval. It's not based on how much money I can make. I understand my identity, my worth, my value is based on you. It's not about what I have accomplished, but it's about what your son Jesus accomplished for me. Father God, we thank you that you are the good shepherd, that you want more than anything else for us to thrive. You want to take us to the green pastures, but you also want to take us to the waters of rest because you know that we need that. We need unhurried time to reflect, to remember who you are, to remember just how blessed we are, God, for all the unbelievable things that you've given us in life. God, we love you. We're so thankful for you, for it's in your holy and your precious name that we pray. Amen. If you're interested in knowing about your next step in your spiritual journey, maybe you prayed to receive Jesus today, you can just text the word Northridge to 313131, right? And we'll get you some next steps on what you need to do. I remind you, there's a prayer team that'll be down forward right after the service if you just need someone to pray with. And next week, Pastor Brad's gonna be back and he's kicking off an amazing series. So whatever you do, make sure you're back here next week. Have an awesome week. Love you guys. It's been a great being with you.